You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
I was actually thinking on the way in, how about this for a goal song? What you're playing right now. The baby I'm ready to go part. Do you think it would work? You can't really chant along, but all of a sudden, hold on, ready? Here comes. Okay, ready? Like, let's play it out here. Here comes Alex Tuck. Shoot, scores! No?
It's not bad.
No, it's not great.
But it... I think it, I don't know, it just, it, I want something to chant along with.
I know.
I think, like, after
that was a great
Germany,
point
I
the guys never, made this morning, I thought.
I had never really thought about that until he said that, but, like, it makes a lot of sense.
It is something where it feels better if the whole crowd can kind of, in unison, be chanting along, singing along, doing something like that, right? I mean, selfishly, I love the song. As Jeremy said, like, Jeremy's like, I like the song. I don't like it for a goal song. I totally see that. I'm better with it than he is for Motley Crue, Kickstart My Heart for the goal song. But I totally understand that. And I would be totally fine. And I get it. Like, this just doesn't necessarily fit to, you know, sing along and have a chant. It is a good song, though, to get the juices flowing. And it does kind of fit when you think you're kickstarting someone's heart. When you have a goal, it's, yeah, everybody's up, the heart's going, it's pumping, crowd is into it, right? Totally fits. And I'm just a Motley Crue fan, so selfishly, totally love it. And it is kind of cool, though. Like, I think about generations. Motley Crue has been around, you know, 40-plus years. And, you know, Vince Neil, and I'm thinking last night, even when they played it, like, boy, younger generation, you know that song, right? You're younger than me. Like, I'm thinking about people like you, or even a little bit younger than you, Josh, which is, like, are you going, wait a minute, Motley Crue? Like, that's not my thing. Or are you like, no, I get it. Motley Crue, you know that song. You've heard it enough, right?
Oh, yeah. No, I totally know that song. Okay. And I think sports is a large part of that.
Yes.
But there was also that Motley Crue, like, biopic a few years ago.
Yes, it was.
And that
dirt.
was really good.
And it's really good.
And I'm not saying, you know, like, people my age would have seen that and be like, oh, Motley Crue, let's listen to them. But at the same time, you never know. But, like, I think that song is just so synonymous with, like, movies and sports and everything. I think it's, like, ingrained enough in culture that a lot of people will get it regardless of the generation. But at the same time, it just, it feels like a goal song, but it also doesn't because it's used in so many other ways.
So
I think it's like, it's almost, it's not that it's overplayed.
No, I get it. Yeah,
but it's like,
it's a good arena song, but not necessarily a goal song.
Yeah.
And I think that's where everybody's landing today. Motley Crue, Kickstart My Heart. And of course, they got to hear it. We got to hear it twice yesterday, but only once actually counted. I mean, how fitting, right? In a snarky, condescending, but just SMH way, how fitting was it that the first time we got to hear it, the goal didn't even count in a Sabres game, right? Like, because Zach Benson puts it in and it's just after the horn actually went or the zeros appeared on the clock. That was last night downtown at the arena. We'll talk about that today on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Good morning, Sal Capaccio with you. And of course, it is a Buffalo Football Friday brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash? Call Salino. And by Crosby's Pizza and Subs. Start your game day the Crosby's way. So we have a lot to get to today. This is not like a Monday. On Mondays, I go, hey, just me and you. But it is just me and you. If you want, you can call, and we're going to take your calls today. I'd like to hear your calls on kind of where you are with the Bills right now with this game. How important is this game for you? Because I have an interesting conversation I had with a Jets podcaster and talking about this game and what it means to the Bills and the Jets. I'll get to that in a little while, and I'd like to get your thoughts on it. 803-0550 is the number. But keep your head and your ears on a swivel right now because Sean McDermott's going to join us sometime in this half hour. Scheduled for about 10:15, so give or take, right? Could be a little bit earlier, could be a little bit later. But Sean McDermott at 10:15 or so. This half hour, Bills head coach Sean McDermott for his weekly radio appearance. At 10:30, John Scott, sports director, Channel 2, WGRZ-TV. I saw John last night before the game. He was doing live shots outside the arena. I want to ask him about the arena atmosphere last night. I want to ask him about the Sabres. And then, of course, the Bills game on Monday night. We're getting towards that here, Monday Night Football against the New York Jets. And one of the reasons is John is a Cleveland Guardians fan. They are going to Game 5 tomorrow against the Detroit Tigers. Big win for the Guardians last night. They stave off elimination, but now it's a winner-take-all Game 5. And, of course, here I am, the evil Yankees fan, and the Yankees win. Yankees win! That's right. The Yankees win. There's John Sterling on the call. Not really, that's me. But they are headed to the ALCS against either the Guardians or the Tigers. At 11 a.m., going to get Paul Hamilton on. We'll wrap up yesterday, what he saw, what he heard from Lindy Ruff after the game, and look ahead for the Buffalo Sabres to the weekend. And, of course, your weather check with Pat Hammer. A lot of you are going down to New York. Joe's going to New York. He's playing Bethpage. And we're going to, you know, get you ready if you're going down to New York for the weekend. It's always a great weekend this time of year to go to New York, spend some time. What's it going to be like for the game? Are we looking at any rain? How cold is it going to be, if it is at all? And maybe even a peek into next week where, I mean, I'll ask Pat, but it looks like so far maybe some warmer weather coming for the Titans home game, you know, a week from Sunday. So we'll get into all that today on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio with you. 803-0550 is the number to call. Last night, down at the arena, oh, man, went to the game. It was great. Great atmosphere. Beforehand, saw the new plaza. Looked really cool. The new mural that was up there. Went in. They just could not. Lindy Ruff used the word snake bitten couple times in his press conference afterwards. No doubt it felt like it. I mean, how many posts can you hit? How many times can you have a wide open net where a goalie makes just a ridiculous save to say, how does that actually happen? And then, of course, 5-on-3, you don't score. Penalty shot, you don't score. Goal goes in at the end of the period that does not count. Just, again, snake bitten. I don't know. But here they are, 0-3, and it's just frustrating right away to start this season. Bills, Monday night at the New York Jets. I'm on a Jets podcast yesterday. My boy, Boy Green, over in Syracuse. He's a big Jets fan, Paul. He's been on this program before. He does a great podcast, a daily podcast for the Jets. He asked me to come on. And him and his co-host, they basically asked me, like, how much is, like, is there panic setting in if it's the Buffalo Bills that they lose, like, as far as record and, oh, my God, how do they need this if they fall to 3-3 and the Jets take over? And my answer to them was, look, people are going to be mad, of course, in Buffalo. There's going to be a lot of, like, very harsh reaction if the Bills are to lose this game to go to 3-3 after starting 3-0 and losing to the Jets and not being in first place. But I also reminded them, because they might not even know this, the Bills were 3 games back of the Dolphins with 5 to play last year. We had 12 games down, and they were 3 games back, and they won the division. A couple years before that, they were 2 games back of the Patriots with 4 or 5 to play, came back and won the division. It is week 6. There are still 11 games to play after this one. So no, I don't think it's any sort of can't win the division, it's panic, but man, I think the way they look, the way they play, what we've seen, that's what gets you more towards that. It's not even the record. The record is, all right, you're right there. It's 3-3. You're tied for the division. You could still win it. You go to 4-2. Now you can almost bury the Jets right away here, right? It's a way, way different game for the Jets than it is the Bills from a record standpoint, from a must-win standpoint. It's not a must-win for the Bills. It's a you must play better for us to feel better about you and for us to know that you can still win this division and do the things you're supposed to do as the Buffalo Bills. But man, record-wise, the Jets win this game, go 3-3, and they're sitting atop the Bills after 6 games. I mean, look at the remaining schedule after that for the Bills. The next 4 games, very winnable. At least they should be. The Bills will be favored in all of them. And I just don't think it rises to that. But I do think this is a game you need to win. You got to beat teams like the Jets, who are not really good right now, especially on offense. They're very good on defense, who are right there for you to be able to bury in your division and put a couple of games back. It'd essentially be 2.5 games back if the Bills do that. So that's where I am with this. But what about you? Like, what's the panic meter for you right now in the Bills winning this game, losing this game, I should say, and maybe even how it has to happen. I did an Always Game Day in Buffalo podcast with Matt Bove. Little plug here. Go check it out wherever you pod. iTunes, Spotify, WGR, Odyssey app. We did one this morning. It's also available on the Sal Sports YouTube page. You can watch us right there. But one of the things Matt and I talked about, I asked him, does it matter how the Bills look in this game, even if they win? What if they win, I don't know, 18-16 on like six field goals or something? Like, does that matter to you? And Matt's like, no, just win. And I'm generally there, but man, we still would have a lot to talk about Tuesday morning when we come over here and show up for the reaction show on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point show, right? So I do think in that regard, it kind of matters, you know, how you look as you. It's not about aesthetics. The wins count the same no matter how you look, and losses count the same no matter how you look in the standings. But I do think after the last couple of weeks, we got to see something a bit different here from this offense especially. We'll get into an injury report. Sean McDermott joins us here in a little while in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, and we'll head you towards Monday night and Monday Night Football against the Jets. But let's start off with Julian in Buffalo. Hi, Julian. You're on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Hey, good morning, Sal.
Good morning.
Go Sabres, go Bills. Just want to touch on a couple things. I agree with you 100%. I am not worried at all. Even if we lose, we go 3-3, even if we look bad and have a game similar to the past couple weeks, I'm still not worried because every year we come out strong and then we go through a slump and then we have a good stretch going into the playoffs. So I feel like it's good for us that we're going through it earlier than what we normally did in the past couple of years. So I'm not worried. I do want to see changes with offense, coaching, and better schemes. It doesn't matter if we don't have that number one receiver or Khalil Shakir. Just we should still be able to scheme guys open. We don't need one-on-ones and every guy to beat their man. Can we just scheme players to get open and make it easier for Josh, get him better protection? But my real question is, what's going on with Dawson Knox? Why is he not being incorporated? Why is he not getting plays? And if we're not going to use him, what does it sell? Tell me, what can we do? What does it look like trading him money-wise, contract-wise?
That's not happening. That's not happening. His contract is not tradable. Sorry. Yeah, I don't. Okay. Just to show you, that's not going to happen because you'd accelerate a lot of. There's money there. They even restructured it like last year. Okay. It's just not going to happen. I think this can be asked about anybody really in this offense, not just Dawson Knox. I think he stands out, Julian, because of the money he's making, right? No doubt about it. But they're not. There's a lot. I mean, I'm wondering why Dalton Kincaid's not as involved. I'm wondering why Curtis Samuel's not as involved. But it stands out because of Dawson Knox's money. They do use him. He's on the field quite a bit, but they're not going to be throwing the ball. And one thing I'll say, Julian, is when he's on the field, really, what pecking order should it be anyway? Do you want him to get more passes than Keon Coleman? Do you want him to get more passes than Curtis Samuel? I mean, money-wise, it might suggest that, but, I mean, he's really not going to be, certainly not Dalton Kincaid, he's not going to be second or third on the pecking order when he's on the field to be thrown a pass to.
What pecking order should it be anyway? Thank you, Bill. Go Bills.
Yeah, you got it. Sorry, I think we have a little delay there. But, I mean, you say what's going on with him. They are using him, Julian. He's on the field. Let me get his actual snap counts here. Hold on. I'm going to bring this up. Bills have, I could do this a little bit easier. I wish I would have known it. I would have grabbed this a little bit earlier and I could have this in front of me. So let me go to snap counts. All right. Snap counts on the year, offensive percentage. Let's go to Dawson Knox. He is over on the field over 52% of the time. Dalton Kincaid, 61. Dawson Knox, 52. By the way, that's higher than, I'm not going to count Khalil Shakir because he missed a game. That's higher than Marquez Valdes-Scantling. That's higher than Curtis Samuel. That's higher than who else on here? Those two receivers. They do run 12 personnel. Maybe not as much as we thought they would, but it is happening. And if he's on the field in 12 personnel, who are you throwing to? I'd rather see Dalton Kincaid get targets. The thing with Dawson Knox that stands out is the contract, right? I mean, that's why people ask a question that Julian just did, like, what's going on with him? You're paying him all this money. And I get that. I totally understand that. He's a good number two tight end. I do. I think that. A good number two tight end, though, was a salary cap hit this year of $7 million that goes to $14 million next year because of the way the money is structured. So we'll see what happens at the end of the year. But right now, I think this can be said for anybody and why anybody isn't or is involved in a certain way or not in a way on the offense. And how that goes. This is Dawson Knox. This is Dalton Kincaid. This is Curtis Samuel. This is Keon Coleman to a lesser extent, I guess. It just hasn't looked great the last 2 weeks for sure. Let's go to Mike in Orchard Park. Hi, Mike. You're on WGR.
Hey, Sal. Thanks for having me on.
Yep.
You know, a lot of opinions is that the Buffalo Bills need to, you know, trade for more players, and, you know, like, we don't have the personnel in the building. But I think we do have the personnel. I just think we're not utilizing the personnel in the right spots at the right times. Like, speaking with Dawson Knox, I don't expect him to get more targets per se, but I expect him to kind of be in that tight end role when, you know, we're running the ball or trying to run screens. It just seems Kincaid, I mean, you know, I'm asking you, it just seems like he's struggling to, as blocking-wise.
Yeah, hey, I don't mean to cut you off, Mike. I'll address this in a little while. We're going to get to Bills head coach Sean McDermott, who joins us right now here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Okay. Oh, sorry about that, Josh.
Coach Sean McDermott's appearance on WGR is being brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. By Kaleida Health, the official healthcare provider of the Buffalo Bills. By Dunn Tire, official tire dealer of the Buffalo Bills. And by Northtown Automotive. For whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown.
All right, Bills head coach Sean McDermott joins me right now on the West Her Hotline. Good morning, coach. Happy Friday to you.
Good morning, Sal. Happy Friday to you as well.
All right, we are debating here a little bit this morning. You and I are about the same age. I am a Motley Crue fan. That is the Sabres goal song. Were you a Motley Crue listener growing up, Coach?
It wasn't at the top of my list, I'd say that, Sal, but I am very aware of some of their songs.
All right, I love that. Okay, Coach, obviously today is not a day where you're going to give the official injury designation for the week for guys, but you can obviously tell us if there's anything that you can give us on that. But let's talk about today. No media availability for practice, but you guys obviously will put out an injury report. How does it look for today with some guys?
Yeah, no one will be ruled out today. No updates from yesterday's report, really, and since today is a walkthrough, we'll have to see more of what tomorrow looks like.
Okay, let me ask you a couple guys specifically what you've seen from them. What do you think about James Cook, where he is at right now after a couple of days of, well, yesterday officially a missed practice, but on Wednesday when we were out there not doing as much either?
Yeah, I don't know yet. Again, we'll see. You know, I'll get a little bit more of an update from our training staff. It's kind of a walkthrough day for us, like I said, and so you don't really get a good look at what they can and can't do. We'll know more tomorrow.
And then would you say the same thing for Khalil, who looked like he did a little bit more yesterday?
Yes, for sure.
Okay, and then on the guys that were coming back, Taron Johnson sheds the red non-contact jersey. He did a little bit more with the bag. How did you feel he got through the last couple of weeks of practice? Obviously, no game last Sunday for him.
Yeah, I mean, he's knocking some rust off. I thought he did some good things in practice. We'll see. Again, at the end of the day, you've got to, when you get a player out of practice, that's one thing. Can they function enough to execute the job and the job description is another level. So that's where we're at with all these guys, and they're all in a little bit of a different position on the spectrum, so to speak.
Okay, a lot of people wondering, you know, at the running back room, kind of what you have in addition to James Cook. What have you seen in the growth of Ray Davis so far, Coach? Running, obviously catching the ball out of the backfield, blitz protection for a rookie. He's a guy that's played a lot of college football. He's a little bit more experienced than most college guys coming in. What have you seen from him so far?
Well, he's off to a good start. Limited sample due to limited touches because James has been our primary guy there. So, again, you know, that'll be affected by James's availability. And to this point, because James has not practiced this week, Ray and Ty have both been getting more touches, and I think they've been handling those opportunities well.
Sean, last week on Sunday after the game, you said you talked with Joe Brady after the game about the end-of-game situation. Then on Monday, we heard you say you guys talked more. I'm very curious, and a lot of fans have asked me, what's it like after a game as far as how you talk with your coaches, when that happens? Do you debrief about every game afterwards and at certain situations? Is it more holistically? And then does it change for a road game or a home game? I'm just curious how the protocol is after a game when you get with your coaches to kind of debrief things that have happened.
Well, it is. I mean, we talk a lot about process here, and, you know, the result sometimes is variable, right? But
yep,
if our process is right, and that's really the root of everything we do. So a lot of the conversations this week were based on that. I would say a week, you know, 2 weeks prior to this, a lot of those process conversations were on the defensive side. And then this past week, certainly a lot of those conversations on the offensive side, and just making sure that we're good. And then from a staff standpoint, communication-wise and just situational football-wise, making sure, again, that our process is as airtight as possible. And, that's what leads to winning.
You've been on different staffs. Is it different for most staffs of how they kind of treat end of game, like after you guys come in and you talk? Do some coaches say, hey, let's talk in the morning? Do most coaches say, hey, it's top of mind, we better get to it, whether it's win or lose, whether it's really great or it's not that great? Is it different, or is it pretty much uniform around the league?
No, I would say it's probably more variable than you'd think. Some mm-hmm. coaches that I've worked around never meet the day after a game. Mm-hmm. Some coaches meet every Monday after a game or whenever that day is. And, some coaches just meet with their leadership group, in this case, the coordinator group. And so it's probably more varied than you'd think, because – you know, you'd think that everyone just, hey, after a game, we're going to meet as a full staff on a Monday morning, and some don't do it at all. So it's kind of, you try and read the room, and for sure, because everything's a race every week from a time standpoint to get everything done that you need to get done, especially off of a short week, what have you. You get a little bit more time naturally on a longer week that, like we're on this week. And so that's the adjustments year to year that take place, that is the journey of a season, and how you can help a team, continue to move forward and grow and come together and improve. And I mean, I think that's one of the neat opportunities we have as coaches to do that and to do it well and to do it as quickly as possible to move our team forward.
Most of the talk from the guys that I've talked to the last couple of days on the offensive side is, hey, like, we don't have to panic and we don't have to change and scrap everything. We have to be better at what we do, but we also have to kind of examine if there are some tweaks here. What is the balance there of when you have two games like you've had the last couple of weeks to making sure that you don't...
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Kind of overreact, but make sure you react accordingly, I guess.
Yeah, that is a delicate balance, and that's been on my mind, quite honestly, a lot of this week. And leave at night. Hey, did we do enough? Did we touch base enough? Communicate enough? Have those conversations enough? And without overreacting or getting, that become a whatever we're talking about, whatever theme we're talking about, discussing. Does that then become the distraction and gets in the way of performance? So. It is a delicate balance, but those conversations are important, and really it's where I'm trying to go with my routine week to week, just making sure that, hey, even though my week may not be the same every week, it's more addressing the things that really need to be addressed. And so it leads for an interesting and sometimes non-routine-based week for me as a head coach.
I remember last year in December, the Chargers had made a coaching change, and we talked about it here on the program and, you know, how you have to kind of be ready for a team that's going to have maybe a little bit more renewed energy, a little bit more renewed focus, maybe because a lot of things are going on in their building. When you see a coaching change like happened with the Jets, is that kind of something you have to be aware of, a little bit of a matching the energy? They're going to be focused. They're going to have a little bit maybe renewed, kind of like I said, focus, I guess, is the word as you go there Monday night.
Could be the case, no doubt. You know, you never know how an opponent is going to show up. Right. We just have to assume every team's going to show up with their best every week because of what the success that we've had, because we have Josh Allen as our quarterback, and in this case, for this reason that you talked about. So, but we have to assume that every week, and knowing that we really can't control that, we have to control the things that are directly within our control, which is our level of preparation, our focus, and then subsequently our level of play.
What is the challenge of a new play caller this late in the process, Todd Downing, who you have faced before? He's been a play caller in the league, but what's the challenge now that your staff faces to making sure that you kind of pivot a little bit from Nathaniel Hackett to Todd Downing and what they may do?
Yeah, again, I mean, outside of our control, it does present an element of some unknowns. You know, week to week, what happens in this league is you get a chance to look at usually a sample and sometimes a rather large sample of a coordinator's tendencies or a coordinator with the quarterback, that partnership and their tendencies. In this case, this will not only be a new head coach, but a new coordinator, a new play caller, and, you know, linking up with a new quarterback in that relationship. So, won't have a lot to go on, so we'll have to do a really good job of trying to adjust as early as possible.
But you do have something to go on, and guys, you know they're very good on that side of the ball. Aaron Rodgers, of course, Hall of Famer. Garrett Wilson, who's dynamic. Breece Hall had a couple nice runs last year against you guys. How about the challenge of those specific skill players on that side?
Yeah, when you have that level of player, I mean, like you said, when you've got, you know, that level of quarterback in Aaron Rodgers and what he's able to do physically, mentally, and then when you have a receiver like that, and Garrett Wilson, one of the tops in the game, and they certainly have a strong connection there, those two, and then their runner in the backfield, you know, it causes some challenges to how much do you want to play with eight in the box to stop the run, and then how much do you have to, because then you're singled up on Garrett Wilson outside, so it leads for a tough dynamic.
And then finally, Coach, on the other side of the ball, I'm sure as a guy who, you know, has coached defense your whole life, I'm sure you have a healthy respect for what they've been able to do over the last several years, and here they are again at the top of the rankings.
Very talented defense. They've been really strong for a number of years, and a lot of, I would say, high draft picks, I believe, you know, in the front, and they just roll them. They're very deep up front. And then with the corner positions, we talk about matchup being a matchup game. They've got a really good corner or two back there, and so it leads to a tough matchup. So they do a great job defensively. We'll have to do a great job offensively and making sure that we're patient where we need to be patient.
All right, Coach, so walk through today and then a regular kind of a Friday practice on a Saturday with the different week. Travel to New York on Sunday. Best of luck to you. Safe travels to New York, and we'll catch up next week.
Sounds great. Thanks, Sal.
All right, you got it. You got it. You too. That is Sean McDermott, head coach of the Buffalo Bills. I think the most notable thing he just said there, nobody is ruled out yet for the game. I didn't expect that to happen today, but we'll see where everybody goes. They could be ruled out tomorrow. Again, nobody's ruled out. It's not a normal Friday. This is like a normal Thursday. Tomorrow's like a normal Friday. Sean McDermott right there also talking about James Cook, Khalil Shakir, kind of these guys still working today. It is a walkthrough. Nobody's going to have a change, it appears, today in their injury designation for the week, for the day. So whatever you saw in yesterday's report, I'm guessing, will be pretty much what you see on today's report. That's Sean McDermott, and of course, his appearances in WGR, brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. By Dunn Tire, official tire dealer of the Buffalo Bills, and by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. We'll be back in a snap. It's time for a break. And of course, back in a snap is brought to you by Snapdragon Apples, the official apple of the Buffalo Bills. And when we come back, John Scott, Channel 2, WGRZ-TV, sports director. Boy, it's a Channel 2 day. We're having the chief meteorologist on, Pat Hammer, in an hour from now. But John Scott joins me. We're going to do football. We're going to do hockey last night. We're going to do a little baseball with John Scott. Everything's on the table on a Friday here.
Great stand up right there, and it's Alex Tuck on a breakaway, shorthanded, save, scores!
Dan Dunleavy on the call last night down at the arena. I mean, the Sabres played a really good hockey game, I think, by most accounts. I think they did. Sometimes I'm watching going, I think they're playing a good game. They're out shooting the Kings at one point. It was like 25-9 or something. I don't know. Wound up pretty lopsided. They just could not get some puck luck into the net. They missed some golden opportunities on their own. There's no doubt about that. And then, of course, Anze Kopitar, just he's a terrific player. He winds up with the hat trick at the end of the game. They lose 3-1. To the LA Kings. I saw my guy John Scott down there doing some live hits outside the arena. The fan fest was going on. Little party in the plaza. They had the gold carpet. They had a band playing. Had a good crowd out there. Had John dressed to the nines as he always does, going on Channel 2, WGRZ TV. Sports director joins me right now on the West Her Hotline. Good atmosphere down there last night, outside and inside the arena, wouldn't you say?
It was really good outside. I think it took the crowd a little bit of time early on.
Yeah.
Almost like they came in guarded.
Yeah.
To get some things going. But especially the McLeod penalty shot and things like that, I think that's when the energy started to ratchet up. And I think it's notable. It was not surprising the great ovation Lindy Ruff got.
Yeah.
I was kind of surprised the amount of boos Kevin Adams got. And people, their responses when I put it out on social media were like, well, he kind of deserves it. So the fans making their voices heard on both sides of the coin.
Yeah, very interesting to me as well. On both counts. And, I mean, Lindy, even in case people don't know, got a standing ovation. That wasn't the case for most of the players necessarily. It was cheering. And then I think Darlene got a standing ovation for being captain. I think some people did. But Lindy got a standing ovation. It lasted. And my wife, Yana, she looked at me. We were at the game. The new video board, by the way, we can talk about that. But she said, Lindy's getting choked up. And I looked and he was getting choked up, John. I mean, it meant a lot, I think, for him to be in that position back in the building. It meant a lot for Sabres fans to see him there. Unfortunately, not the result they wanted last night. You've covered him now. You've been able to talk to him. I know that, you kind of got here. You didn't cover Lindy originally, right? When he was here, you weren't here yet, right?
No, I got here January 2014.
Okay.
So not too long after. They were transitioning to the true drought era that we have come to know.
Well, as someone who then did not experience that, or him growing up like I did playing for the Buffalo Sabres as a captain, what has been your kind of observation from the outside about the affinity that people have for Lindy Ruff and the connection here?
They love him, and I can kind of relate to it because the Guardians at the time, Indians, Mike Hargrove was like the Lindy Ruff of that team in the 90s, the greatest era of that baseball team's history, went to two World Series, came so close to winning it all for a city and a franchise that doesn't win championships in the sporting realm. And he came back briefly later on in his tenure. And those types of stories are always great for fan bases that especially are starving for success and can then look to a beacon of when success was pretty regular. And that's what Lindy Ruff has been. I asked him the first day of training camp how much he was maybe still soaking in what it means to be back with this team. And at that point, in that setting, he said, I'm past the nostalgia part. This is back to work. But I think last night, as you indicated, it's a different story. It's a different moment to finally have 13,000+, 15, whatever, KeyBank, 18,000, however many people are in there, show their affection all at once. It had to be overwhelming for him, but you're also then seeing the other side of it, which is what made him so endearing and makes him so endearing to this fan base. He's tough. He's straightforward. He's no nonsense. And you heard it in his comments after last night's loss.
Yeah, no doubt. And I did like the fact that he recognized as well, like, look, we played the way we should be playing. There are only a few minutes there of the game. He said, there's only a few minutes I'm going to not like about this game. Sometimes you just have a little bit of puck luck or bad puck luck. That's what seemed to happen last night. But overall, through three games, John, 0-3, you're sitting there and thinking, oh my God, here we go again. It just seems like, and you can't blame any fan for thinking, okay, here we go, another wasted season. You hope that's not the case, but I can't blame any fan for kind of getting to those depths right away already.
100%. And what were some of, you talk about people booing Kevin Adams, what are a lot of people so critical of him coming into this season? Why? Because he did not address the top six. Mm-hmm. There was so much turnover and talk about grit and the way we want to play with kind of repurposing the bottom six. But the top six, they're once again going with this plan of, well, let's just rely on the fact that Tage Thompson's going to get back to being the elite scorer. Let's rely on the fact that Dylan Cousins is going to be this great player. Let's rely on Alex Tuck having been more at the top end of his career numbers rather than maybe in the middle. That's what they did once again. And yes, it's 3 out of 82, but one goal in each, and it even kind of goes back to last year. Yeah, they dealt with injuries, and yeah, maybe the bottom six wasn't great, but the best players on the team were not the best. They did not play their best last year. Some of them, probably most of them, regressed. And you're not seeing them come out the gate in three games being showing you anything that would make you believe, okay, they're going to get back to that top form that they were in a few years ago when they barely missed the playoffs. To me, you could talk about the bottom six and the goaltending and whatever, new coach and all of that, but your best players have to be at their best. And to my eye, even dating back to last season and three games in here, they haven't been for the Sabres, and I'm going to put it on them.
John Scott on the Western Hotline. We'll talk more about the Sabres with Paul Hamilton at the top of the next hour. So let's transition here, talk a little bit about the Buffalo Bills, their game coming up Monday night against the New York Jets. Do you subscribe to, believe in, I know there's some math on this as well, the quote-unquote bump a team gets when firing a head coach and another team kind of having to be on the lookout for that, so to speak?
Sure, because it puts people on notice,
yep,
for lack of a better term, of, hey, heads are going to start rolling, decisions are going to start to be made drastically with when it comes to the head coach if we don't get our act together, if we do not perform better. And I'll be real interested to see how Aaron Rodgers plays. Is Aaron Rodgers not Aaron Rodgers because he's in his 40s coming off an Achilles injury, or is Aaron Rodgers not Aaron Rodgers because there was some divide between he and Robert Saleh? I don't know. I probably would lean more towards he's in his 40s coming off an Achilles.
Right.
But overall, maybe some guys will bump. But I was down on the Jets, lower than on the Jets than a lot of people, because of that. Aaron Rodgers is 40 coming off an Achilles. And outside of Garrett Wilson, I've never been a Mike Williams fan. He's coming off a major injury. I mean, what makes – I couldn't find things that made me believe that outside of continuing to have a good defense, very good defense, why this they all of a sudden would be catapulted and ascend into a conversation where they are not only a legitimate threat to the Bills in the division, but this an AFC contender. I just never saw it.
Well, I would think that on Monday night, they might go back to trying to run the ball against the 32nd ranked, you know, run per play defense in the NFL. They have Breece Hall, who just hasn't been able to get off this year, but last year had a terrific game opening night against the Buffalo Bills opening Monday night. To me, I guess that would be their formula, but I agree with you. Like, I haven't seen anything necessarily from their offense that makes me think they're going to turn it on, and this Bills defensive line needs to be able to outperform the Jets offensive line in this game.
I think the Bills' defensive front, you could maybe go the whole team, certainly on the defensive side of things. I mean, they're the X factor. We see, with not to steal something from the offense, when the defensive line is eating, when they're constantly producing pressure and disrupting and getting quarterbacks off their spot, the defense as a whole has a different tone. They have a different veracity to themselves, and they're more effective. And we always hear Sean McDermott, and I've heard it even other games with other broadcasters. Belichick, I believe, said it on the Manning cast the other night. The front and the back end of defenses work in unison. They work synergy. It's if the front's doing well, it helps out the back. If the back's doing well, it helps out the front. But this group, that was my biggest concern, maybe even beyond the wide receivers, and that may be a bit extreme, but I didn't know what they had there. And ironically enough, Von Miller was someone who was giving them a bump above expected. Now he is out with a suspension. You need more from A.J. Epenesa. You need to see more consistency out of Greg Rousseau. The guy pops, and you're like, okay, this is great. And then you don't see him for a couple games. You just need more consistency. I do like what I've seen from Javon Solomon in very small sample sizes. But that group, I think, is going to be the real dictator, not only Monday night against the Jets, but moving forward for the Bills' defense.
All right, on the other side of the ball, two games in a row here, very uninspiring performances from the offense, and then we obviously had the injury to Khalil Shakir in game one, the first game, I should say, at Baltimore, where he just wasn't the same. He misses, and that really just tightened the reins on everybody. Just looks to me like teams are daring them to beat them with their wide receivers and saying, you can't do it. They're sending pressure. How do they fix it? How concerned are you about these wide receivers, the passing game, and what teams are doing to the Bills right now?
Well, clearly, no one can separate, and that was the biggest concern when this group was put together. And they got away with it early on. I think part of that's opponent base. I think part of it is also simply that teams didn't know what the Bills were going to look like with this new collection of wide receivers and this passing game, and with Joe Brady fully acclimated in the OC realm. And like every team in the league does, gets tape out there and teams figure it out. And the opponents also ratchet it up here. And we know what the New York Jets can do as well. To me, I don't understand, dating back to even when they drafted Dalton Kincaid, why is he not a focal point? I think that was a large assumption for many people that, okay, they're pivoting away from Stephon Diggs and an alpha at the wide receiver position and maybe transitioning to this everybody eats, but maybe funneling things more towards a favorable matchup that includes Dalton Kincaid or even the running backs like a James Cook. They haven't done that. And to me, okay, week one, it was, oh, they were throwing two, sometimes three people, the Cardinals, on Dalton Kincaid, and it opened up for other people. But you traded up in the first round to get him. I didn't like the move at the time because I just didn't think there were enough targets and he could be impactful enough to warrant it. And now the opportunity is there, and Joe Brady has to find ways to scheme him open and make Dalton Kincaid be the player that when they drafted him, they said that he would be in this offense.
All right, listen, tomorrow I have a much more relaxing Saturday than you because my Yankees are into the ALCS. Your Guardians have a winner-take-all Game 5 against the Detroit Tigers. And on top of that, you have your Ohio State team at the same time playing against Oregon. How are you going to manage the stress tomorrow?
I have no idea. One of my best friends actually invited me to go to the game, but I was like, I'm going to stay at home. I got some things to do. Want to prepare, obviously, before leaving for the Jets trip in a day or so. So I'm going to watch it from home. I also want to keep an eye on the Ohio State game. I don't know what to do. Like, we have picture-in-picture, but that's not going to suffice. I can't – what am I going to choose to put in picture-in-picture here?
Well, here's what I do sometimes. Here's what I do. When I have, like, the Yankees and a football game on, I'll put the football game on the TV and the Yankees just on my computer screen in front of me. So I literally have two things going. I can kind of go back and forth. It's not picture-in-picture, but there are two screens right there, and I can be a little mobile with the one if I need to move around.
I could do that. I could do that. I could take one of the TVs off the wall from upstairs and bring it down. It's not that big. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe we'll go out. I don't know. I have far more confidence in the Ohio State Buckeyes this weekend than I do against with the Guardians. Scooble, I mean, you talk about out of nowhere, and he's going to win the Cy Young. He was lights out against them in Game 2. And honestly, I've seen this script before where the Guardians get in these critical matchups and they face a hot pitcher, whether it's John Lester in the World Series against the Cubs, whether it's Josh Beckett or Pedro Martinez with the Red Sox. I mean, the list goes on. Andy Pettit back with the Yankees. You just have this feeling of, okay, it's great. They finally won an elimination game, but their offense is just so frustrating. It's so inconsistent. And I just have very little faith, especially going up against a starting pitcher on a heater. But maybe the progressive field, Cleveland Magic, can will them. And if they can maybe scratch and claw one or two and make it a bullpen game, then I think I feel good. Because even though Class A is now allowed, honestly, like more runs in two games against Detroit than he had like all season, you get to the back end of the Guardians' pen, and I like to feel good, but they're a tough team to put a lot of confidence in just because they just don't look or feel like a lot of teams that are true championship contenders.
Well, I would like to thank the Guardians because if and now I for your sake, I'd love the Guardians to win, although that would be very stressful for me because you and Josh and all these Guardian fans around. But at least by making it go five games, Scooble gets used up tomorrow, being he can't be used again in the early part of the ALCS if they win.
Right. You don't have, and if the Guardians win, you don't have to worry about any of their starters. Exactly. None of them are that intimidating. Oh. So, it would be fun. We've had a few moments here during my time over the past 10 years where the Guardians and the Yankees or Indians, whatever, have had playoff battles. You and the Yankee crew have gotten the better of them most of the time, but I would love another crack at it. So let's hope Saturday is a double win for me and fellow Ohioans.
Enjoy tomorrow night, whatever, how you ever consume it all, and safe travels to New York, and we'll catch up, buddy. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, you got it. That is John Scott, WGRZ TV2 sports director. Paul Hamilton on the way next. We'll take a timeout, be real quick on the back end, do another timeout, then we'll get Paul Hamilton at the top of the hour to talk Sabres and everything that happened last night. I'll get to the entire NFL schedule as well and my thoughts on each game here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
Yeah, tomorrow really is an awesome sports day. UB plays Toledo at 12 noon. Sabres at home against the Panthers at 7 p.m. Got my Syracuse Orange at North Carolina State at 8 p.m. You got Game 5 of the Guardians-Tigers series tomorrow night. You got Ohio State-Oregon tomorrow night. It's awesome. And we're going to be on top of it all. We're going to talk about the Sabres and their play last night with Paul Hamilton, who joins us next here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on a Buffalo Football Friday.
It's Paul Hamilton.
That's what they called me in college, was the bone.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
People ask me, well, how are the Sabres going to win tonight? I don't have a clue.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
All right, our Paul Hamilton joins me right now on the Wester Hotline. It is a Buffalo Football Friday, but of course the Sabres played last night, a loss 3-1 to the LA Kings. They play again tomorrow at home against the Florida Panthers. I don't know, Paul, do you call it just puck luck? Is there some skill involved here where they just couldn't bury the puck? You've mentioned how many posts this team hits. They hit posts last night. They had a 5-on-3 they couldn't cash in, a penalty shot they couldn't cash in. They finally do, and oh yeah, it doesn't count. And oh, by the way, good morning to you.
How are you?
A little frustrated after last night. Went to that game. Very frustrating. Have all those chances. They seemed, to my eyes, to play well and just couldn't get the result.
Yeah, exactly. They did play extremely well, and especially for the first 40 minutes, where those two really bad mistakes that they made in the third period shouldn't even mattered. I mean, they should have been at the time 5-0 or 6-0 or something like that, where you make the silly mistake that Dahlin made and the puck winds up in your net. Okay, it's 6-1. Or you make the silly penalty that Samuelson does and that goes in the net. All right, it's 6-2, but you're fine. I mean, they did the work very well to score goals, but last year they couldn't score goals, and here they are in the first three games this year they can't score goals. So it's not something that just cropped its head up this year. It happened for all of last year. A lot of it can still be contributed to the power play, even though the power play was better. They did have a 1:09 with a 5-on-3. They got one scoring chance. That's all they could muster. They did get the puck in the zone, but that's all they could muster was one scoring chance in the 5-on-3. Los Angeles had a 28-second 5-on-3. Technically, they didn't score. I think they scored a second or two afterwards. The player coming out of the box wasn't anywhere near the play yet. So it was still 5-on-3 as far as what was going on in the game. And they scored on theirs to put the game away at 2-1 with only a 1:38 left in the hockey game. So, you know, if you just get one power play goal in the game there, in your opportunities there, or you score on your 5-on-3. Okay, Dahlin makes a bad play, gives the puck away, but it's only 2-1. You know, you're not tied, you're not down, you're still up. So, you know, those are the things that are just killing them. But the amount of goals they miss, Tage Thompson just can't seem to hit the net. He did have 5 shots on goal, but he had quite a few wide. It's just let's not make any mistake here. Darcy Kuemper is not one of the better goaltenders in the National Hockey League. Average at best, and I might be nice calling him average, but you know, twice out of 3 games, Markstrom and Kuemper have been made to look like Dominic Hasek. And how many times did I say that last year? I think if I recall last year, there were a couple of goalies that came up from the minors and shut down the Sabres. You know, so it's just it's not a problem. It's just starting this year, but it's still a problem for them. And I don't have a crystal ball to say, well, they're never going to score goals this year. I don't know that. Who knows that? But they have had problems now for one season and 3 games at scoring goals.
Tomorrow night, by the way, it'll be the battle of so far early power play futility. The two teams in the league that are both 0-for-6. The Florida Panthers, believe it or not, Paul, also 0-for-6 on the power play. So, and we know they're a very talented team. So it can happen even to the most talented teams. But what did you like or not like last night versus the weekend on the power play? Lindy talked about zone entries last night and him liking more about it, but them just not able, obviously, to convert.
I thought they worked harder in their battles on the power play. I thought when they did get it in, they battled and won some battles and started being able to work it around. Yuri Kulik had a nice one-timer from the circle, you know, got himself loose for that because he was on the power play. And, you know, so I think there were things that were better, you know, and a couple of times they did get some pucks to the net and some people to the net, but, you know, not enough. And it still was, though, you know, trying to force passes at times, and then those plays wound up being broken up and cleared. So, you know, they're still trying to force passes. They got away with a couple of those forced passes where they tried to force a pass and it went off a skater at stick, but it went to a Saber. So it went to a different Saber, but the puck didn't wind up going out. So they were fortunate on some of those passes where, you know, it didn't cost them and they still maintained possession. But, you know, it just goes to show you again in 3 close games, if you get a power play goal in each game, does that change the complexion of any of those games? I would imagine it would have. And, you know, maybe you can at least get a couple of those games to overtime, because that's another problem from last year. The Sabres were one of the worst teams at loser points. They couldn't get games to overtime. And Alex Tuch talked yesterday about, you know, that second New Jersey game. They didn't have their A game, but it was still a game. That's a game when you don't have your A game, get it to overtime. You know, get and it and they had the opportunity to do that. It was tied 1-1, and just don't make a silly play. Just make sure you mind your P's and Q's. Make sure you don't turn the puck over and give them odd man rushes. Get the game to overtime. Get your point, and then you, who knows? Maybe you'll steal the second point in 3-on-3 or in a shootout. Same thing with this game. I mean, most teams, including the Sabres, if they're leading in the third period, going into the third period, they win the hockey game.
Mm-hmm.
And especially as well as they were playing after two periods, out shooting them 27-11, and the shots definitely, you know, looked like the game looked, you know, and you've got the lead going in. You got to get that game at least to overtime. Even if all this happens to you, you got to be able to get that. At least you can't leave that game last night with no points, as well as you played and as well as you dominated at times. You can't leave that game without points, but yet they did.
How'd you feel UPL played last night?
He was fine. I mean, the second goal, the game winner by Kopitar, Byfield was in front screening him, so he didn't get a good look at it. And
great shot too, by the way.
Yeah, and the first one, bang bang in the net. They left Kopitar after the Dowling turnover. They left Kopitar coming down the slot by himself, and this is a guy that scored that goal many, many times in this league, and he came down the slot, got rid of it right away. And put it in, so I wouldn't say that was a bad goal either. So I thought he was fine. He didn't have a whole lot of work, more work in the third period than he's part of that penalty kill too. You need your goaltender to make a save for you.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I liked was he would make the save and then his teammates would get rid of the rebounds, whether it was penalty kill or when they were defending. You know, when the other team did get some opportunities, they weren't getting second and third chances against him. So, you know, he was solid making the save. His teammates were there, clear rebound, and the puck was out of danger.
I believe the power play goal, the game winner, was the first power play goal surrendered by the Sabres this season. They had been perfect for 5 and then 1 for 6 overall. But one thing that led to that, and Lindy spoke about it last night, the penalty to Mattias Samuelsson, and he said it's a good call. That's not a bad call. That's just bad situational awareness by Mattias Samuelsson.
It is. It's a silly penalty to take, especially when you're down a man. And you're going to get called every single time for that. You slash somebody's stick and you break it out of their hands, you're going to the penalty box. And the referee had no chance, no choice. No choice but to call it. He had to call it. In the NHL, sometimes they go, well, we're not going to put a team down, 2 men, 1 minute left, you know, when they should, even if there's a penalty, but they don't. But this one, or when you flip the puck over the glass, you're going. I mean, those two are just, you're going to the penalty box. It was just a silly penalty. And I'll be interested to see if maybe Bryson or Gilbert is in that spot for practice today.
And then tomorrow, do we think UPL again? Or do they go to Devin Levi here? I was looking back. Levi's second start ever was against Florida. He gave up 2 goals. UPL's obviously played them a few times. So a little unfamiliarity. It's also his former organization, obviously.
Yeah, if you're going with, you know, Lukanen's your number one goaltender, I think he plays the first 3. And then Levi plays in Columbus next week.
Yep.
Because that's back-to-back in 3 and 4. Now, you could, if you wanted to, put Lukanen in this one and have Levi play the first game in Pittsburgh and then have Lukanen play Columbus and Chicago if you wanted to do that. So if you're going with the assumption that Lukanen is your number one goaltender and they're not going to be splitting time, that I would think Lukanen would be in goal, yes.
Anything on J.J. Paterka or any of the other injury updates, Paul?
Well, he was on the ice. Most morning skates are going to be optional. The players and Lindy spoke, they're all were hanging around, but yeah, they weren't on the ice. And Paterka was. So I was wondering if they were going with the suggested guidelines on concussions, which is 7 days, and 7 days would be Saturday. If he wasn't feeling well or was off, I don't think he would have been on the ice.
Right.
So they might have just said, let's not fool around with this. He got hit pretty hard. Let's not fool around with this. Let's go with the guidelines and do 7 days. They didn't put him on IR and call anybody up. So we'll see if he's on the ice for practice today. But I think that at least was a good sign that he was one of the players on the ice for the morning skate yesterday.
All right, buddy. Well, hey, our Yankees are through, which is good. We can relax a little bit as the Guardians and Tigers take it to Game 5 and use up some pitching, so that's good news.
Yeah, I was disappointed I missed a game by Cole because Cole pitches such beautiful games that...
Pitched a great game last night.
Yeah, if I had to miss a game, I would rather miss one of the other ones that he's not pitching in, but... You know, hey.
You got a TV up there in the press box. I will tell you what I did. I'm full disclosure. I even warned my wife and son. We went to the game last night, and I said, I'm bringing my phone. I'm putting the Yankees game on the app at times. So during the middle of the Sabres game at times, I literally, like, I had the drink on the spot in front of us, and I put my phone behind it so I could just kind of look down and watch what was happening and Cole was dealing. But we were able to watch a little bit of it, and then I saw the final few outs when we finally got home last night, and that was cool.
Yeah, I'm too concussed to be able to concentrate on two things at once like that. So, you know.
Protocol for you? Protocol
I'm a little,
for you,
I'm, too? I'm a little shot that way. Okay. So, you know, I don't want to divert my attention from what I'm supposed to be doing. So, no, I didn't have it on around me.
Paul, have a great weekend. We'll catch up next week.
Okay, take care.
All right, that is Paul Hamilton on the Wester Hotline. Of course, Paul's appearances on WGR brought to you by Equitable Advisors. Planning for your future is about more than just money. Let Equitable be your guide. And by Relax Honda, relax, we got this. All right. We've had Paul Hamilton. We've had John Scott. We've had Sean McDermott. We still got to get to Patrick Hammer. But before we do any of that, we got to get to this week's NFL schedule. NFL week number 6 already started last night. How about the Niners coming to life on offense against a really good, we thought, Seattle Seahawks defense? Seattle starts the season giving up no more than 20 points a game in their first three. But then you look back and say, wait a minute, that was against the Broncos? The Patriots? Broncos and a rookie quarterback who don't have a great offense. Patriots, who have nothing on offense. And the Dolphins without Tua the week after he was out. And then they go and play the Lions and give up 42. The Giants, they give up 29, one of the special teams at the end. And the Niners last night at 36. The Niners, in the meantime, needed a big win here. They had been a bit reeling. They had lost three of their previous four. They get back in the winning track. And now, Niners against Chiefs next week. Interesting game. Chiefs coming off a bye, though, and Andy Reid's very good there. But Niners-Chiefs next week, after the Niners beat the Seahawks last night to start NFL Week 6. What do we got on tap for Sunday? Maybe the best game of the Sunday afternoon slate. Commanders-Ravens. You could probably think that the Ravens are just going to beat the Commanders. They're really just kind of playing above their head. They're going to come back to earth. I'm not so sure about that. The Ravens can be had sometimes. We saw the Raiders do that to them. And Jaden Daniels looks like the real deal at this point. We'll see where it goes. I like the Commanders' offense. I like what they're doing. They can't really stop anybody. This is going to be a high-scoring game, and I think the Commanders have a chance. I'll take the Ravens to win it, but I think the Commanders have a chance to pull off an upset here because sometimes the Ravens can just have one of those kinds of games that we've seen. They've already had it this year already. Jags at Bears, Caleb Williams and the Bears offense coming to life last week, and now they face the Jags, who really, they haven't been able to stop anybody through the air. I think Caleb Williams is in for another nice day, but here comes the Jags. And their offense, after a win last week, can they keep it going here? This should be a good game. I think, what am I going to go here? I think the conventional wisdom says to take the Bears, but I keep thinking in my head that the Jags are better than what they've played. So I think the Jags have a much more legitimate shot here, but I don't even know what the line is. I have to check on that game. Should be a fun game. Should be a good game. We'll see where both teams go. Cardinals at Packers. Cardinals big win over the Arizona of the 49ers last week. Packers don't really kind of know what to do with them right now. They play really hot and cold in games. Like, they're super hot at times for a while, and then they're really cold for a while. They've done that against Tennessee, against Minnesota, even last week a little bit against the Rams. They are at home in this game. Cardinals coming off a big win, like I said. Both teams are coming off nice wins. Packers should be the team here, but, man, Cardinals, don't sleep on them. They can fight. They can win. They're 2-3, but we know that they have some talent there. Texans at Patriots. I do not expect this game to be close. I don't care if the Texans have Nico Collins or not. Now, I will say that the Patriots can play some defense. And without Nico Collins, at least they'll be able to kind of maybe do some things to slow down the Texans offense. I just don't know how the Patriots are going to score. They have to get a special teams touchdown or defensive. Maybe Drake May is, whoa, oh my God, look at this guy, what he can do. He's going in to be their starting quarterback. Texans should roll in this game, but hey, you never know. It's the NFL. I guess you do know here, because if they do, if the Patriots win, it'll be like a 15-12 game, like one they played last week against the Dolphins. But I think the Texans should just take care of business here. Buccaneers at Saints. Lots of thoughts going out to all of our friends, colleagues, family members, everybody in the Tampa area in Florida. They didn't get necessarily hit as hard as some of the people where I know that live down in the lower part of the Sarasota, Englewood, where I used to live, just really beat up after these hurricanes. The Buccaneers took their entire operation, their staff, their team, their players, everybody, some family, to New Orleans earlier this week. My buddy, he's been on the program here, TJ Reeves, is the sideline reporter for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, checked in. He's doing well. His family's doing well. But I know that's been very stressful on them. And now they go to New Orleans, a team, though, in New Orleans who will be without their starting quarterback in Derek Carr. I think the Buccaneers should take care of business here. Sometimes that happens, and you rally, and you band together. We've seen it happen with the Bills having to move because of a snowstorm, right? A couple of times. The Jets several years ago, the Browns last year in Detroit. And you rally together. You come together. You play for one. It's just kind of bonds your team. And you're playing a team without their starting quarterback in Derek Carr, who also just has not been nearly the same team as we saw the first 2 weeks. I like the Buccaneers here. Browns at Eagles. This is a monster game for a lot of reasons. It could say a lot about both teams' direction for the rest of the season. Look, the Eagles are the better team here. They should win this game. But the Browns have talent. We know that. Maybe not at the quarterback position like a lot of people thought they would, but that's it for them. Let me start with the Eagles. If the Eagles lose this game, that seat under Nick Sirianni is getting turned way, way up. It is already pretty hot for a coach in a market that gets seats very hot very quickly. Philadelphia, that is a market where they are all the love in the world and all the scorn in the world for their players, their coaches. If they lose this game, I think you're going to hear a lot of chatter about the future of Nick Sirianni, Jalen Hurts, their relationship, everything. If the Browns lose this game, maybe you're looking at them starting to say, okay, maybe we should trade Amari Cooper. We're 1-5 in our division, which is pretty good. What do they do with Deshaun Watson? Do they actually at some point think about benching him? How do you do that? You can't move on from his contract. Monster game for both teams' organizational directions, I think, after this one and where they could wind up going. And maybe even really their season. The Browns got to win to stay alive. Eagles don't have to do that. But they can't fall to 2-3 the way the Commanders look and having the Giants now starting to play better and the Dallas Cowboys in their division. Colts at Titans. These are two teams that are underperforming right now. Colts looked really good against the Steelers, and then they go and play the Jags last week, and they come back to earth. They can't stop the run right now. The Bills play the Colts several weeks down the road. They play the Titans a week from Sunday in Orchard Park. Two teams the Bills should be able to beat. Because I have not seen a lot that's really impressed me from either, other than a play here or a play there from Anthony Richardson or maybe Will Levis when he's not giving it to the other team. I don't know. At home, I guess I'll take the Titans, but I think the Colts can win. Let's see. If Joe Flacco plays, he seems to be better for the offense. This is a... I don't really know what to take in this game. I think the Titans at home, I guess, will be the play. I'd take the home team, I guess, in this game. Either way, could go Colts, could go Titans. Chargers at Broncos. Okay. What do you got, Chargers? Big spot for you. You had a bye week last week, coming off two losses. One to Kansas City, where you only let up 17 points to the Chiefs, but you only scored 10 points each of the last 2 weeks. And now you have a Denver Broncos defense. It looks like it has Denver Broncos that have a really terrific defense. Here's the Broncos points allowed last 4 weeks. 18, 9, 7, 13. They did allow 26 somehow against the Seattle Seahawks in week number one. I think there were some turnovers there in there as well. Now the Chargers... You know, they have a chance here, I think, to kind of write their script the way a lot of people thought they would be this year and go to Denver and win. But Denver looks good right now. Denver looks good. And Bo Nix is efficient, not good, but efficient. He was a bit last week. I think the Broncos win this game, but the Chargers, after a bye week, don't discount them here going to Denver and having a game plan that kind of surprises the Broncos. Steelers at Raiders. Who's starting a quarterback in this game for the Steelers? Is it Justin Fields? Do we even know that? Is it Justin Fields? Is it Russell Wilson? Have they come out? They said it. Do we know? Who's starting for the Raiders? Don't even know that at this point. They're juggling quarterbacks left and right. Steelers 3-2, Raiders 2-3. The Steelers are probably the better team here. I'm still not convinced in them. I mean, when they were 3-0, we're like, yeah, they're really not that good. And then they've lost the last two, right? I mean, that's just what we expected to happen. They lost 20-17 to the Cowboys Sunday night. And the Cowboys, they don't have a very good defense. And the Steelers could only score 17 points on them. I don't expect Steelers to score a lot of points on the Raiders. Maybe a little bit more here. I don't know. You know what? I'll do it. I'll take the Raiders. This should be an interesting game, though, that could say a bit about each team, but especially bigger game for the Steelers, I think, than the Raiders. Raiders won't be in there at the end. The Steelers are looking to be there at the end. Falcons at Panthers after that great game by Andy Dalton when he took over for Bryce Young. They've come back to earth here. They have now allowed, look at their, oh my God, their points allowed. 36, 34, 22, 36, 47. Yeah, Falcons should win this game. They've looked a lot better. Kirk Cousins looks good. Threw for 500 yards last week. Lions at Cowboys. Cowboys can't stop the run. They're not that physical. Lions are going to pound it at them. And then Jared Goff's going to basically make them pay through the air once that happens. I think the Lions have a chance to beat them pretty good here. I'd be surprised if the Cowboys won this game. If they keep it close, sure. I mean, that can happen. I think the Lions should kind of roll here, to be quite honest with you, what I've seen from them. But who knows? Bengals at Giants. This is your Sunday night game. So you got a game on Sunday night at MetLife. Bengals at Giants. A game Monday night at MetLife. Bills at Jets, just like last year. Happened week one. Had Cowboys-Giants week one. Then you had Bills-Jets week one. So Bengals, boy, they can score. They just can't stop anybody. My goodness, 41, 24, 38, 26, the points allowed. But they're scoring in the 30s every week. Joe Burrow looked great. And here come the Giants playing good football right now. Better football. Daniel Jones looking a lot better. They've won two of their last three. They're not scoring a lot of points, but they put up just enough last week against Seattle to win. Just enough against Cleveland to win. I think the Bengals win this game. But man, if they don't, and they go to 1-5 after this loss, now another team that, what's the direction? What are you doing? Where are you going from here? We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll have Patrick Hammer tell you about the weather in New York, New Jersey, for the Bills. Monday night football against the New York Jets. We'll be back in a snap. And of course, that's always brought to you by Snapdragon Apples, the official apple of the Buffalo Bills. Back here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, Sal Capaccio with you. And of course, it's a Buffalo Football Friday brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash? Call Salino. And by Crosby's Pizza and Subs, start your day the Crosby's way. Earlier, we heard from Sean McDermott. Check that on demand at WGR550.com and the Odyssey app. He gave us a Barnes injury report brought to you by the Barnes firm. Car crash? For help, call 1-800-8-MILLION. Really no changes on the injury report for today. The team will have a walkthrough, so expect what you saw yesterday as far as who's limited, who's out there. But then tomorrow's the big day for this week because a Monday night game to see who's actually going to be ruled out. As of now, Bills head coach Sean McDermott said no one is ruled out for the game on Monday night. Speaking of Monday night, Bills, Jets, Meadowlands, East Rutherford, New Jersey at MetLife Stadium. What's the weather going to be like? Let's talk with Patrick Hammer.
Break it down. Stop. Have a time.
And Patrick Hammer joins us right now, WGRZ TV2 Chief Meteorologist on the West Her Hotline. Good morning to you, buddy. Happy Friday to you.
And to you, I got to start things off by saying I was a little disappointed with your interview with Coach McDermott. Because he announced that he's not a big Motley Crue fan. And
I know.
That kind of hit hard. You know, I
he didn't say that. What he said was it wasn't at the top of his list, of his playlist.
He's familiar with a few songs.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He's familiar with a few songs. So I guess you're right. He didn't say like he didn't like them. But you're right.
Yeah, it wasn't his cup of tea. It's fine. I just was like, I thought he was going to start talking about an experience he had at a concert or, you know.
You thought he was going to be a roadie, right? You thought he was going to be a roadie, just traveling around the country with Vince Neil and Nikki Sixx and Mick Mars and Tommy.
His real nickname is Dr. Feelgood. I thought that's what he'd say, but no.
That would have been an amazing soundbite. If Sean McDermott came on the radio and I asked him about Motley Crue and he said, you know, Sal, in my younger days, they called me Dr. Feelgood, we would be playing that over and over as a liner here on WGR for many years.
For years to come, absolutely, absolutely.
Hey, listen, obviously, let's just start with the seriousness of what happened in Florida this week. And obviously, we've talked many times over the years about me living there and having family and friends there. This was a direct hit to where I used to live. This was Siesta Key was the direct hit, but just south of there Englewood is the town that I lived in, and the major extensive damage there, and down into Port Charlotte and Punta Gorda. And this is an area that's already been reeling. Thankfully for me, that I'll report that the friends and family, I know that they're okay, but people have a lot of damage. My mother-in-law lives in Venice. She had some damage to her backyard. Her house is good, fortunately. But boy, Pat, I mean, this hurricane, I'll just give you the floor to talk about watching this thing and grow to what it grew and what it did.
Yeah, and it kind of hit an area. I don't know if you were there in 2004, I think, Hurricane Charlie.
I went through Hurricane Charlie. It's the only one like this that I've ever really gone through. And then I said, I never want to go through this again.
Yeah, and that was a similar storm in terms of size and strength. Yeah, this one was remarkable in the sense that it kind of did a weird thing. It's not unheard of, but it came from the west and moved to the east. Directly. Yeah. And that's not a usual path that hurricanes take. The fact that it, you know, two major hurricanes hitting the same side of Florida within, you know, 10 days or 2 weeks is just incredible. And the fact that this storm went from like a bunch of clouds to a Cat 5 in like 16 hours. I mean, it exploded. Yeah. And if there's anything that we were lucky is that the storm did weaken as it made landfall. So the storm surge could have been a lot worse. It was certainly bad, but you know, there was, you know, possibilities in Tampa, especially of, you know, 15-foot storm surges. Luckily it didn't get that high, but nonetheless for Siesta Key, Sarasota and Point South, it was a terrible storm. And, unfortunately we're not necessarily done. It's going to quiet down for a while, but, there are signs that, tropical activity may ramp up again by the end of the month. So that's something to watch.
There's a couple of disturbances out there. The next named storm would be Nadine. Hurricane season goes mm-hmm. till the end of November. I'm reading a little bit about Nadine. That looks like to me, just from what I've read, I'm not the meteorologist during this portion, but that there's not expected to be any sort of development now, but you still have to monitor it for the future.
Absolutely. And I think there's a couple systems that may form potentially down the road, 10, 12 days, in the Gulf of Mexico again. So we're not out of the woods. Yeah, it's been a season that was so quiet initially, just, you know, just ramped up quickly.
Yeah, it seemed like it's been later this year. But like I said, goes through November. That water's pretty warm out there. All right, so the Bills obviously play in New York Monday night. I love going to New York City this time of year. I think it's fantastic. You know, October, early mid-October. It's just it's a great city to walk around in. Are we going to be able to do that this weekend? I know a lot of Joe's playing Bethpage Black tomorrow, by the way. He's going there. He's playing Bethpage Black, and then he'll be enjoying New York City. I know a lot of people who go there for this game. It's a holiday that the Bills play on. So what are we looking at for the weekend and for the game?
So when we were talking a week ago, Sal, we said, hey, can't turn our heads away from the weather potential for the Jets game. And the good news is there's a system coming, but it's going to move through before the game. You are heading to New York, Sunday doesn't look great. Like here, there will be rain showers there on Sunday. But Sunday night into Monday, it'll dry out. It'll be breezy. It will be on Monday itself in the 60s for highs. But by game time, it'll be in the 50s. So it'll be kind of a nice fall day on Monday. It will be breezy in New York and New Jersey, but rain-free. The rain that moves through, the same rain that's going to be moving through here on Sunday will move through there Sunday night, and it should be done, wrapped up on Monday. So the weather looks pretty good.
So dress warm for the game, because it's going to be a little bit chilly and a little bit breezy, but you shouldn't have to worry too much about precipitation.
No. It looked like there was a chance.
Yeah.
Because there is a pretty strong storm moving through New England that's going to stir up the wind. But most of the rain with this, and by the way, high elevation snow, will stay well north of New York, more so in New England and upstate New York. So I think dress for cool temperatures for sure on Monday night.
Okay, and obviously I have already started to look at the Bills' next home game, which is a week from Sunday against the Tennessee Titans. I know, Pat Hammer, it's a little too early to look at all of that stuff, but it looks like maybe a warming trend next week. Are we looking at that?
Yeah. Okay, so the week is going to start off like November, early November, 40s, with rain showers Monday, Tuesday. Can't rule out a few hilltop snowflakes in the southern tier Monday night and Tuesday. So it is going to be a real fall feel to start next week. But as you said, it does warm up by the end of the week. I think Sunday has a chance of being a really nice day. We're going to be in the 60s, it looks like, so temperatures will warm. There is a front that will be approaching on Sunday, but given that it's a 1 o'clock kickoff, I think the game gets in before that front gets here, so it should be a pretty nice day with maybe a little breezy, but it will be much warmer than the rest of the week. 40s for highs in October is pretty cool. But yeah, by next Sunday, we're back in the 60s.
Hey, the weekend though, people here, this is like this is a big weekend for like the people going to the pumpkin farms and, you know, you're wrapping up. I know some golf out there. People want to get it from the last few weekends in there. I mean, we're traveling, obviously I'm traveling to the game, but I won't leave till Sunday, you know, with the team charter because the game's on Monday night. So I got some time on, we got some baseball this weekend, still some fall baseball going around with people, just a lot going on. Sabres game at home tomorrow night. Just what does it look like this weekend here in Western New York?
Saturday's your day, okay, for outdoor stuff. Looks good. Temperature's right around 60. Not bad, but a pretty nice day. Sunday just kind of looks lousy. 50s for highs, cloudy skies, some showers around, breezy. So, no, I'm not saying, hey, do we cancel our trip to Fall Fest in Ellicottville? No, of course, go. But it's just going to be a little damp. So if you want to do golf and you want to do outdoor stuff, Saturday's your day.
All right. You ever see Motley Crue live?
1988.
Yes!
Monsters of Rock Tour.
Love this.
Candlestick Park. It was this was the lineup. Jet Boy, who I don't even remember who they are. Poison.
Yes.
Okay? And then Motley Crue. And the crew, this is when Tommy Lee introduced his like 360 swivel drum set,
yes,
where they would lift him up and then he would start spinning and he's drumming upside down. It was insane.
That is what a great story. I love that. And so we saw them, my wife and I went, and we just moved back to Buffalo 2011, I believe it was. We go to Darien Lake to see them. Okay, they go to Darien Lake, they play in the amphitheater. This is 13 years ago now, and we sat, you've been at Darien Lake for concerts, right? You been there? Okay, so in the middle there, they have like underneath the pavilion, right in the middle, we were kind of sitting there, and they come out, they're playing Home Sweet Home. They literally walk off stage, get into a scissors lift, a bucket on the scissors lift right next to us in the middle there, and it goes up the scissors lift as they're playing Home Sweet Home on the guitars and singing. Okay, it was amazing.
Awesome.
It was just great. Now listen, the rest of the concert, they pretty much had the music really high because Vince Neil's voice was terrible. So they had the music really high. It's okay. The novelty was amazing. So anyway, my wife, Jana, she's from Germany originally. She didn't have any idea really about Motley Crue or that I liked them. So she's like, yeah, I'll go with you. I don't care. I don't care if she necessarily loved the music or not. It was just the fact that we were there together enjoying it, but you know, whatever. Yeah. Anyway, so the point was, she was fine with it. Years ago, they did this documentary called The Dirt, right? You see this thing? It was called The Dirt or Dirt Motley Crue. So we're watching it. It's this documentary on Motley Crue. And it's like literally 10 years after we went to this concert. And then she finally looks at me and goes, wait a minute. When we went to see them, Tommy Lee was in this band? I'm like, what are you talking about? Yes, we saw him that night. She knew Tommy Lee.
Oh, but she didn't know that.
Like,
she
didn't. Yes, never put two and two together.
Oh my gosh. I was in Las Vegas, probably in the early 2000s, and we were at a steakhouse at a hotel, and we walk up, we're sitting by the bar, and I look over, and I'm with a group of about like seven buddies. There's Vince Neil. Oh, wow. And Vince Neil was sitting at the bar. His face looked like a raisin, but he looked a little weathered. But to be within 10 feet of him, of course, we left him alone, didn't say anything. But there he was with his, I don't know if it was girlfriend, wife, date, whatever, but there he was. And so I kind of got two experiences with the crew. But that's a concert in 1988 I'll never forget. And then his voice was still good. He could still hit the high notes.
There you go.
I think Vince Neil now like sticks the mic out to the crowd and tries to let the crowd sing, right?
Hey, whatever you got to do to make it work. Last thing before I let you go, what did you wear to that 88 concert, whatever it was you said, 89? Was it like, what did you have a headband on, long hair? What'd you look like?
I had kind of a little bit of a Sean Cassidy flow going, you know, a little longer, a little blonder hair back then. And it's funny you ask. I think that same year I saw Boston on on tour. Yeah, and I think I had a Boston t-shirt on. this was after their third album. You know, they didn't have a ton of stuff, but their third album, they toured that. So I think I wore the Boston rock group, you know, rock t-shirt is what I wore. With the flowing hair.
Well, I'll do the radio thing and segue here and say, anytime you come on, we get more than a feeling. I appreciate it, brother. Thank you so much for doing
that.
There we go. Pat Hammer, hey, enjoy your weekend. Thanks for the updates, buddy. And listen, Monday, Josh and Zach will be hosting. I'll be in New York, but I know that your phone will be open if there's any changes in the weather, if they just want to talk to you about what's happening Monday night.
I'll be here.
All right, thanks a lot. You got it. Pat Hammer right there on the West Her Hotline, WGRZ TV2 Chief Meteorologist. What a great guy. Always appreciate him joining us on a Friday and taking his time out. We'll take a time out here. We'll come back. We'll wrap up your Friday Extra Point Show, the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on a Buffalo Football Friday. The words and the rhythm here would be good for a goal song. More than a feeling, right? But just not that hard-hitting, which is what you kind of want for a goal song. We're talking about goal songs today because the Sabres, they played last night, Motley Crue, Kickstart My Heart. And it was received pretty well as a song, but a lot of people saying not a great goal song. So Pat Hammer talked about that and said he saw Boston that same year. He saw Motley Crue back in the 80s, which is really cool. This is Boston here. So, Sal Capaccio back here with you on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on a Buffalo Football Friday. Brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash? Call Salino. And by Crosby's Pizza and Subs, start your game day the Crosby's way. We had Sean McDermott earlier. If you missed that, on demand, WGR550.com, Odyssey app. All the ways you can listen to Sean talk about the Barnes Firm Injury Report. Brought to you by the Barnes Firm. Car crash? For help, call 1-800-8-MILLION. We expect the same report from yesterday to be today after a walkthrough, and then tomorrow we'll get the official injury designations for the game Monday night at the Jets. Real quick here, we've been talking this morning about some more Davante Adams chatter. This is where it's coming from more than anything over the last 24 hours. This is Marcel Reese, former player and executive with the Raiders. He was on Kay Adams' podcast.
I'm going to tell you this because I'm a little closer to the situation than I should be, but I think there's a sneaky team that a lot of people aren't talking about that could come in late. I think it's going to pick up here.
Tell me this.
In the next few days.
Does in the next few days or weeks?
I'm going to say weeks.
Yeah. I don't have time for this. What? Does the sneaky team rhyme with Schmills? It does? Shoot, I'm so
You're
good. I'm so
You're
good.
I want to know how Kay kind of knew that, too. Kay, what do you know that you're not saying, right? Like, how did you know it rhymes with Schmills? She could have said, does it rhyme with Schmangles? She could have said, does it rhyme with Schmavens? Well, even though they're not a mystery team, right? But how did she know that? Very interesting. Hey, great Friday show today. Thank you so much, of course, Bills head coach Sean McDermott for his weekly radio appearance. Also, John Scott, WGRZ TV2 Chief Meteorologist, Paul Hamilton for joining me, and WGRZ TV2 Chief Meteorologist. Oh, wait, John Scott's the sports director. Sorry. Sports director John Scott and meteorologist Pat Hammer. Maybe they'll switch roles one day and see if one can do the other. In the meantime, stick with us right here. We got Sabres Live coming up next, then One Bills Live, Show up in the Bulldog, today on a Buffalo Football Friday. Enjoy your weekend.
You gotta take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.